Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Marty Walsh faced an apparently friendly Senate confirmation hearing today after placing the brand new police commissioner on leave last night pending an investigation. We will talk about all of that a little later in the show. But first, Massachusetts Congressman and Chair of the House Rules Committee, Jim McGovern, is with us. Today, Rules asked the House to strip a Republican colleague of her committee seats after Republicans refused to do it themselves. It is one of several unilateral decisions or actions that Democrats appear ready to take. Congressman McGovern, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Happy to be with you.
So there's so much for us to talk about. I do just want to start by getting your reactions to the fact that it appears Marty Walsh had a smooth confirmation hearing today. Obviously, there's more time before the vote. But what would his confirmation as Labor Secretary mean for us here in the Commonwealth, do you think?
Well, first of all, I'm delighted that he received a warm reception in the United States Senate. He deserves to. He's been an excellent mayor, and he'll be an excellent Secretary of Labor. I mean, what it means for Massachusetts is that working people will have a strong voice in Washington. I mean, he is an ally of labor. He will fight to make sure that people earn a living wage. He understands the importance of workers having access to health care and to pensions. So I'm really excited about it, and I think he'll do a great job, and I expect he will be confirmed overwhelmingly.
All right, let's go to the People's House now. You and your hot colleagues there took up a measure today to strip Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene of her committee appointments. You advanced the resolution as chair of the Rules Committee. Why?
Because I think there has to be a response to the hate and to the violent rhetoric that she has espoused for, you know, not just a few years back, but recently as well. I mean, you know, she has advocated and endorsed language calling for a bullet to the head of Speaker Pelosi. She has talked about trying members of Congress for treason and having them executed. She has claimed that the terrible school shootings at Sandy Hook and Parkland were fake, were set up. She denied 9/11 happened. I mean, I'd go on and on and on. You know, she shared a video on her social media of a Holocaust denier, saying some of the most anti-Semitic things possible. But the bottom line is, this is somebody who has advocated that members of Congress be assassinated or executed. And being on a committee is a privilege. It's not a right. And I, you know, in the past, we have denied committees to people like Congressman Steve King of Iowa who embrace white supremacism. I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene is worse than Steve King.
So, Congressman, I want to point a couple of things out and play some sound for you. On the floor today, she acknowledged that 9/11 happened. She said she regretted her remarks and they were from the past. I want to play you a piece of another thing she said today. Here she is.
And if this Congress is to tolerate members that condone riots that have hurt American people, attacked police officers, occupied federal property, burned businesses and cities, but yet wants to condemn me and crucify me in the public square for words that I said and I regret a few years ago, then I think we are in a real big problem.
So two things there. One, your response to her walking back of those things today. And two, the underlying threat there and concern that there could be a tit for tat, that this sets precedents for others in the future when Republicans are empowered to strip others of committees based on things they've said in social media.
So she finally admitted that 9/11 occurred, but she didn't really walk anything else back. She didn't apologize for any of the violent rhetoric, the bullet to the head comments or any of that stuff. And she equated the American media with QAnon, which is a violent cult. And she comes up with these false equivalencies. I mean, the bottom line is the standard and the precedent that we are setting today is that if there's a member in this chamber who advocates assassinating other members, you know what, they don't deserve to be on committees. The voters of Georgia can vote to send her here if they want, but those of us in this chamber who serve, you know, have an obligation to make sure that that we, you know, we uphold a high standard in terms of conduct. You know, while she's giving that speech, she was fundraising, basically doubling down on her past remarks, saying, I won't back down. So, look, I mean, this was not a speech of contrition. This was basically trying to say that, I'm a nice person, so don't do this to me. But I mean, she, you know, on her social media, she says the words, we will not back down. We will never give up. And again, what she has said is so far beyond the pale that we need to respond. If we don't respond, then the implication is that we're all okay with this. Well, I'm not okay with it, and we'll find out whether a majority of my colleagues are okay with it.
I want to bring this back home now, because there's a lot of business before Congress this year that's going to be really relevant to the people of Massachusetts. This is what appears from the outside to be a pretty pitched battle between Democrats and Republicans around who is being held accountable for what. Are you able, while this stuff is going on, to also enact the business of Congress with Republican colleagues, or are we seeing a kind of scorched earth that's just going to put everything on the back burner for 2021?
We can walk and chew gum at the same time. We can demand accountability for what happened here on January 6th. We can demand accountability from people like Marjorie Taylor Greene, and we can still do people's business. We are moving forward with a COVID relief package and an economic stimulus package, and we are trying to work with Republicans to try to get some of their buy-in on this, on what we're doing. But we're not going to nickel and dime these things to the point where they're ineffective. So we are trying to work in a bipartisan way. President Biden has met with Republican senators. I mean, we continue to consult with them to try to get their ideas. But at the end of the day, I mean, the president made a promise in this election, and that was he's going to crush this virus and help get this economy back on its feet. And that's what he's going to do. And so we are moving a budget reconciliation bill through the House and the Senate so that we can preserve that as an option, so we can pass a budget with a majority of votes. We don't need 60 votes, and so we're working on that as we speak. All the committees of jurisdiction are trying to figure out how we can help this economy and help crush this virus.
You know, we talked to your colleague in the Massachusetts delegation, Stephen Lynch, earlier this week about that bill as well, the COVID relief package. He basically said there might be room for bipartisan agreement, but happy to go forward without it if that's necessary to get this done. We know there's been basically a $1.3 trillion gap between President Biden's proposal and the offer by 10 Senate Republicans, but that the president did signal that he might move toward Republicans on how targeted the $1,400 stimulus payments are. Is there a path to getting a bill passed there by both parties that provides real relief to the American people? And what's lost if it has to be done through a procedure instead of getting it passed?
Yeah. Well, look, the American people elected a Democratic majority in the Senate and a Democratic president because they believe in bold action. They want somebody to deal with this pandemic and solve our economic crisis. And they believe, I'm looking at polls overwhelmingly, that President Biden's American Rescue Plan is good for the country. I think like 74%. They understand that this is real. And so we're ready to work with Republicans, but we're not going to let them, stall and delay this relief package. Time is of the essence. And, you know, if there are ideas like maybe targeting some of the relief in a better way, I think the president said he's open to that. But there's a big difference between, what the number in terms of what the president has proposed and what the Republicans are proposing. So we need to pass something that will be effective. And people are expecting a bill that will be effective. They're not looking for a bill that has, a Republican co-sponsor. They're looking for a bill that will help solve the crisis that we're facing right now. My hope is that Republicans will join with us on this. And if that happens, I will be the first to applaud it. But I've seen Mitch McConnell in action before, and I've seen Kevin McCarthy in action before. We're not going to let them nickel and dime this down to the point where it's meaningless. We need real relief, and we need it now.
And you feel like the majority of the American people will be comfortable with a going-it-alone approach by Democrats, despite President Biden's bipartisanship message, if that's what's necessary to get things done. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
President Biden is sitting down with the Republicans, listening to their ideas, and I'm sure that some of their ideas will be included in this bill. But, you know, when I go home, you know, when I talk to restaurant owners who are looking for help so that they don't go out of business, when I talk to families that are struggling, they're not saying, well, you know, make sure that whatever the bill is has Mitch McConnell's approval. What they're looking for is something real. And the American people voted for the American Rescue Package. In essence, when they voted for Biden and voted for a Democratic House and a Democratic Senate, we're going to move that forward. If we can accommodate Republican ideas, we will do that. But again, the issue that we should be focused on is, you know, we need to make sure we pass something that is effective, that is going to solve the problems that we're confronted. And I think that's, yeah, that's what I'm focused on. And my hope is that Republicans will support us on this.
You just mentioned struggling families, restaurant owners, small businesses here in the Commonwealth. We talked with you in November about spiking hunger. You know, right. You're talking about this relief package. We are still in it with the pandemic.
Right.
Is this going to be a year of hunger in the Commonwealth? And what do you do about it?
Yeah, well, one is we need to pass this relief package because it will increase benefits for people on SNAP. It will provide more money for food banks. It'll provide more money for struggling businesses so they don't have to close off. So that will all be helpful. But we have a hunger problem in this country. We talked about this before in your show, as you mentioned, and that hunger problem existed even before this pandemic. So I'm pushing this president to appoint a hunger czar or a food czar who can help coordinate these efforts in the federal government. And I'm also asking them to do a White House conference on food, nutrition, and hunger. We need a comprehensive, holistic plan to deal with this issue. We don't have one. We have lots of programs. All of them do good things. But we need to connect all the dots so that we can move forward to solve hunger once and for all. So I'm hungered by, you know, some of the things that President Biden has done in terms of supporting increased SNAP benefits. He's already increased the benefits by 15% for families with kids. You know, these people get real money in their pockets. And he's rolling back some of the Trump administrative rules that restrict eligibility. So we're making some steps in the right direction. But we need a comprehensive, holistic plan to tackle hunger. And I'm going to continue to pressure this administration to make sure that this is one of their priorities.
That is Massachusetts Congressman Jim McGovern, who represents the 2nd District. Congressman, I know it's a busy day there today. Thanks for your time.
It's always good talking with you.